Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet, and welcome back to Waypoint's end of year celebrations for 2018. As I've said a couple of times already, for the next couple of weeks, we are going to be delving into.
You don't know that? This could be first.
I think Monster Hunter World is first.
Okay.
I hope. That's why I gave that whole big spiel. I've said it already. It's true that I've said it before. Some of our favorite games, and then we're also doing our top 10 lists, as I have said already. That was the voice of Patrick Klepek also joining me today, Natalie
Hello.
Watson.
Hello.
Okay, here we are. We are going to talk about one of 2018's best games, Team Cherry's Hollow Knight, which, let me just check, released February 24th, 2017. What happened? Why is this
Did
here?
Not know that was a Kickstarter game either.
It was a Kickstarter game. It was part of like the indie box. It was a whole bunch of things with that game.
Wow.
But I think most of us got to it this year because it released on the Nintendo Switch in June and then on the PS4 and the Xbox One only in September, which I did not realize it was so late.
I thought.
Yeah, that's what Wikipedia says.
PC only game for like almost a full year, right?
Totally. So I think a lot of people came to this game this year. And before we get into it all the way, I'm curious, just high level, what were your experiences with some of the kind of games that Hollow Knight's drawing on? Metroidvanias, a little bit of Dark Souls in there, stuff like that.
So I have a long history sort of with the genre, starting with Super Metroid. I owned a NES, but don't remember playing Metroid 1 or 2. I also don't know that I would have at that age had the patience or interest to like do like draw a map. You know, it wasn't until Super Metroid where like the game like handled that in the interface. So maybe I played those games, but I don't have any recollection of it. But Super Metroid I fell for really hard, like a lot of people, and like it was a short sprint from there to one of my favorite PS1 games, Symphony of the Night. So
sure.
Where like I played Super Metroid and liked it, but was like too young to really internalize video games, whereas Symphony of the Night was closer to me, like not just liking video games because that was what was put in front of me and I was a kid. Like I was still like relatively young when the PS1 came out, but it was like older where it was like I was choosing to like stay interested in video games, whereas like other people in my life were like, they still played video games, but it was like one of a number of things they did, whereas video games had become like a primary hobby of mine. It was an interest. It was around the same time that I was like, you know, doing stuff online. And so like Metroidvania games like have been like a real constant for me as I've gotten older.
Throughout your whole.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And then Dark Souls, we know your history with Dark Souls. Natalie, how about you?
I am the complete opposite. Ooh. I have never played a Metroid game or a Castlevania game.
Those are the two.
the alpha and the omega.
Those are the alpha and the omega. Yeah, exactly.
This was never a genre that I felt like. It's so interesting that this year has actually become the year of me playing games and genres that I like signed myself off on. Like I was just like, I'm never going to play these kind of games because they're not for me and I'm like not good enough at them, or you know, something about like I don't care about like the way, I don't know, it just wasn't what I like looked for in games. Like I'd always been about story and like the sort of like the having the threshold that I needed to cross be like being physically demanding or like being
skill-based
having to,
challenge, all that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I like puzzles, like I like stories, I like those kinds of things, but anything that would like required like demanded physical finesse from me was like already gonna kind of like, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna be good enough at this.
And then you played Bloodborne and Hollow Knight and Dark Souls and probably and some other stuff in that space, too.
Yeah. And then, yeah. And then I played Bloodborne at the beginning of this year because we...
Oh, that was part of that stream we did.
Yeah, we did the...
You were taunted by a group of people as you attempted
to play. We're like, what game could we make Natalie play?
Yeah, just throw her off the fucking deep end, you know?
And... like. We're like, we want to do Dark Souls, but Dark Souls Remastered isn't out yet because we had thought it was going to come out on Switch and then we could like do the Dark Souls thing.
Right.
And then we're like, oh, well, we have Bloodborne. So we started, and I'm glad we started with Bloodborne to be like, I think if I would have started with Dark Souls, I would have fallen off way faster just in terms of not being able to. Anyway, this is not that podcast.
Well, but there are some.
It's important. Yeah.
I would actually say, like, in terms of like the combat of Hollow Knight, which is like which is combat heavy in a way that, even though there is a lot of combat in Super Metroid and in Castlevania, like sort of like the like sort of linchpins of the like mm-hmm. the genre, like really subgenre, the hybrid genre that like Hollow Knight is building off of. Mm-hmm. Hollow Knight places a much higher priority on combat finesse than a lot of games that just have combat as like, you know, exploration tends to be like A, and then combat's like, I don't know, B, C, or D. Like, it's in there, but it's not a primary. And yeah. Hollow Knight is very much exploration and combat are on like,
and I feel like that and I feel like that combat is usually based on like weaknesses and like, oh, like yeah. do you like the it's like more of like a weapons triangle sort of thing, or like at least from my understanding.
Oh yeah, ice missiles against this boss. Whereas yeah. in Hollow Knight,
rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. Right. In Hollow Knight, it feels like Bloodborne or something. Where it's like, I'm learning these boss patterns. I really got to nail the execution.
Yeah, exactly. And so having Bloodborne prep me with like rewarding sort of that aggressive play, actually, I think was better for my transition into Hollow Knight than starting out with Dark Souls would have been.
Sure.
Because, or maybe not, I don't know. Like, being careful and deliberate is actually how I ended up finishing Hollow Knight, and it's not how I started it. So I think I actually, it was an interesting thing where I went from Bloodborne to Hollow Knight and then to Dark Souls, and I think that was like the right sort of transition for me because I was able to start pacing myself at the end of Hollow Knight and be patient in a way that I now am learning with Dark Souls as well.
I think it's easier to do the arc that you did, though. I think like it's easier to start aggressive and move backwards than it is to start like Dark Souls, you know, very easy to fall into like the sword and shield, like slow pace thing. And then the reason Bloodborne was such a revelation to a lot of people, especially who have been fans of those types of games, is because it's like, ah, fuck all that. Like, actually, you just need to go in there and just like stay aggressive. So I think you had like a really interesting arc in terms of being able to retreat to something a little more passive and analytical than having a game saying like, actually, you need to like forget everything you were doing before and just like get in there and fuck that thing up. So watching you have that arc in 2018 has been like really fascinating.
Totally. I will say like, so for, you know, for my part, I came in playing, having played, you know, a ton of the Castlevania games that were kind of more open world and you know, a lot of those on portable consoles. Like, I liked Symphony of the Night, but I probably played way more of the GBA and then DS Castlevania games.
Yeah.
I played like the Circle first of the two. Moon and
I think Circle of the Moon. What was the one after? Dawn of Sorrow? DS one?
Was the DS one. Or is it Aria of Sorrow? Maybe it was both. Anyway. Regardless, I come in with a lot of that stuff, and obviously people know that I've been playing the Dark Souls games and Bloodborne and all that for years, but what I don't have is the like deep love of 2D platforming, which we haven't actually talked about here, because this is a game that's very, very much in a line of, like you said, skill-based already, but not just for combat, but also for jumping on stuff and doing like interesting wall jumps and difficult like puzzle platforming stuff. I've played my braids. I've played all the 2D Mario games and beaten them, you know, but it's been years since I was a devotee of that stuff. Yeah. And so one of the things that got me into it was like the big thing that brought me in was actually I knew I wanted to play this game on Switch. Once I read Bruno Diaz's piece from our Game of the Year thing last year, in which he makes the case that like hey, you're looking at this stuff and all you're seeing is it's a platforming game, it's a Castlevania game, it's a Metroid game. But what it is drawing on in a different way is, or what it's doing is it's elevating this the genre I knew I love, which is the kind of Souls, the emerging Souls-like genre, and it's actually doing something new and different with it. And that was how I definitely knew I wanted to come into it. And then I kind of punted on it and continued to punt on it and continued to punt on it until, Natalie, you came in to the office and were just like glowing about it. Do you want to talk about your initial experience with it? Like going in, having played some Bloodborne, but not necessarily knowing much about Hollow Knight yet. Like, what were your initial impressions of it? Why did it make such a strong impression right out the gate?
Yeah, I went in just completely blind and didn't know anything about the story. And the Switch was really the first time it came into my view. And so when I started playing, I was just super, I had this like moment where I was like, okay, I can play these types of games now. Here's a game that is like come to Switch on a platform that I like and is comfortable for me. And this is a game within a genre that I'm just beginning to get familiar with. And it was like almost a kind of like wanting to say like, okay, I want to master one like on my own. Like I kind of want to go into this and I have my bearings sort of, and I feel like I'm in the right mindset to finally be able to play one of these. And so I think it was actually the first boss that really hooked me. When I was like moving around through the world and stuff, everything was like, first of all, the world design is amazing. Yeah, and it is so like gloomy and full of like melancholia and sadness and a lot of like just like unknown information or just like remnants of information or remnants of memories and stuff like that. And so, but when I hit my first boss and I died, I was like, okay, so this game is actually going to do the thing of like, and it wasn't like I died without like knowing why I died. Like I could see what I was doing wrong and I could feel that there was like, okay, I'm going, like there is a system to learn here, that there is like something to engage with here, that it's not about sort of like I don't have to brute force my way through this game. Like I can be patient with it. And I think just knowing that like I can just be patient with this game was so attractive, because I just got to like just spend time, as much time as I wanted. I ended up spending like over 70 hours in this game. But yeah, I think that's what really, after the first boss, I was like, I want to see how this game is going to challenge me. And I also really care about these characters. I think when I first met, what's her name?
Oh yeah, that's a great moment. Hornet?
Hornet, yeah.
Yes.
When I first met Hornet, that's when I was like, oh yeah, this is like, there is some shit going on in here. And like, I chasing her was like such a huge motivation throughout like me like moving through the game.
What's her deal? Like, what? Okay, there's another actor in this dungeon. It is not just me and then mindless enemies. Someone else has an opinion about the stuff going on, which means some stuff is going on. What the fuck is going on? Patrick, how about you? Had you watched it previously as a PC game and been like, oh, I'm gonna wait?
Yeah, well, it had a lot of people yelling at me about it the year before because
sounds right.
You know, as people knew that it was correctly assumed it would be a game that like lined up with my personal interests. And it was, I think, because it was on PC, because PC is not where people traditionally play even these types of games, even when they do come here. Not that there isn't an audience for it, but it's just tends to be a game that people play on TVs or handhelds. Like that is just kind of where that genre has shifted. It's just not really thought of as a console or handheld genre as opposed to a PC genre, even though the distinction doesn't mean anything really, but it's still kind of thought in that vein. And for me, it was mostly I don't have a good reason. It just fell off a list, like 1,000 games fall off a list of priorities. And then it just kind of fell at the right time on Switch in terms of the games that I could play. And it was, the first thing that captured me playing it was the world. I had a similar feeling playing this that I did. I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but in the episode where we talk about Mutants Year Zero on Waypoint Radio on a Monday episode some weeks back, that is a game that conveys a world extremely quickly and impressively without deep exposition dumps. I mean, it has exposition, but there's like exposition and like capital E exposition where like a game is like clearly like, here's exposition time.
Settle in for the tale of Diablo or whatever.
And it's so, it's impressive because you don't notice it. And like, that's what makes it all the more impressive is that when you suddenly slip into a world and you start, you're curious, you want to fill in the blanks yourself, like the game's giving you just enough to work with, but you want to know more. And even more so, like similarly to you, like what kind of tipped me my interest was more than just, I played lots of games that are good Metroid style, Castlevania style games. I played lots of games that have influences from Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. But part of what, and I still don't remember who wrote the tweet, but it was something along the lines of like, lots of games have tried to imitate the Souls games. And that's where we get a lot of the Souls-like genre from. Not a lot have taken lessons from Souls and then tried to apply them. So I think those are like fundamentally different things than just aping what Souls did and putting a spin on it and like saying like higher level, like what is this game trying to accomplish design-wise, narrative-wise, and then bringing that in. And I was like, well, that's really fascinating because that's like a fundamentally a little deeper than normally what you get when someone invokes the term, you know, Castlevania or Metroidvania or even Dark Souls. And so, like, even just the simple way that you come into this game and the characters speak very plainly, right? Like, yes, yeah. There's allusions to and mysteries, but whereas everyone speaks in riddles and he-he-he-he's in the Souls games and, you know, everyone speaks much more straightforward in Hollow Knight. It is very much not trying to trick you with the narrative. Doesn't mean it's like spoon feeding you everything that's happening. You're still putting together things yourself, but it is far more like, hey man, like here's what's going on. It's still well written, but it's just a little more upfront about what the story is trying to tell. So like that's the stuff. The world gripped me really quickly, and then you know all the stuff piled on top of that with the combat and the even just the layout of the open world, which I'm yeah can get into, but like it was the world itself and the storytelling and the subtlety that it was accomplishing it with was really what grabbed me initially.
I mean, I think one of the things to get at there is that it blends those two things really well, the world and the storytelling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hollow Knight is a game that, you know, I haven't finished Hollow Knight. I admit I fell off of it. The fact that it may still crack my top 10, it's like right on the edge, says a lot. Given that I'm someone who does not like jumping puzzles or doesn't respond well to them, I'm fine.
And these aren't
like,
really your
fine
type of games anymore,
no,
right?
No,
like,
right, totally.
Even if you play them a lot as a kid, like, yeah, like general sense that you don't.
Totally.
Whereas yeah, I get excited for a new one of these, like, you kind of have to be dragged in, like,
it's got to be
something special.
And it might blow me away, but go ahead, Natalie, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, a platformer for me is, like, an instant, like, even after Hollow Knight, like, I'm still, like, so, so hesitant to play a platformer because I just don't, like, think of myself as enjoying those types of mechanics.
So yeah, so I think one of the big things that you were both hitting at is like the experience of exploring this world through the really smart level design, the ways in which abilities unlock new directions to go, which is like a hallmark of the genre, but here helped to communicate a sense of scale and a sense of history. Like every time I went to a new place in Hollow Knight, one, it was like, all right, what's the trick to this place? Like, do I need some sort of stuff to not get killed by like a toxic fog? Do I need to like zip around using like a cool, like almost like flight mode that you unlock mm-hmm at a certain point? Is there going to be lots of flying enemies here? Like, what's the deal? And then separately, it's like, well, why does that deal exist? And again, there's a reason for it. Like in the way the world feels and the way the world exists and what the history of this place was. I mean, one of the very earliest ones, parts of this is just the fast travel system being the last stag, this one old giant beetle who has been like running through these tunnels by himself for
my
eons.
Sad boy.
Yeah, when you're first introduced to him, he's called the old stag.
Yeah.
Or like the elder stag.
Oh, really?
And then his name changes to the last stag I'm almost positive about
did
that.
You,
because
maybe you didn't, Austin, Natalie. Did you get yeah. to like the secret location?
Yeah. So basically,
what's the secret location? We're gonna go spoilers.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
Talk
spoiler
here.
Heavy.
Yeah.
So there's a point at which you can open up a pathway to like where the stags used to live.
Yeah, I've now looked this up. This is wild.
Yeah, there's like the stag station, and when you get up there, he talks to you and he's like, I'm not sure if like anyone else survived. There may be one, like I think I am the last stag, but I hope like there are some, but I can't go.
So actually, so you, like, the thing that's wild here, I just looked this up, is it's I have it backwards, which is it starts as the last stag, it becomes the old stag, because in that moment, and this gets to something.
Fuck.
Yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
What actually happens is you find an egg at the top of this area that's like been recently hatched. Like you, I think you can, I don't know if you examine it or somehow, but basically there are signifiers that show that like someone recently has left the stag station and has like gone somewhere,
which like speaks to this underlying sense of hope in the face of ruin in this game, right? Like this game has
totally.
No problem saying like, oh, this old king was terrible, oh, these people all suffered, oh, this place is burnt to the ground, and I don't even want to talk about the Deep Nest because the Deep Nest terrifies me. Like, it has no problem playing in the realm of terror, but partially because the world is filled with all these other little adventurers you run into, and partially because the town continues to grow as more people come back to your place, like, there is this sense of, it is melancholy, but it is not hopeless, you know?
Yeah, you are, like, a lot of the abilities that you get towards the beginning of the game are, like, sort of, like, light-oriented. Like, they, like, have a lot of, like, flash, like, when you dash, it's, like, kind of like a flash of light, and it feels, like, very, sort of, you are the sort of beacon of hope, and then the story complicates that.
Right. The story says, like, well, maybe the light isn't so good by in and of itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which I love because I feel like, I don't know, I think they do it in a way that doesn't feel like, okay, we're going to make the typical good thing bad and the bad thing good, because I don't think, like, this game has no clear lines of, like, morality or like, I think there's like people trying to do their best, and then there's people taking advantage of that, which is like such an interesting way to engage with,
right? Light. And not something you traditionally hear said about a Metroidvania.
Yeah,
right.
Especially not one that's like light and dark.
Right.
Like,
right.
There's not right. like going into the gray areas between that is I just really loved how Hollow Knight like kind of finessed between
yeah.
the two.
Patrick, you brought up the level design and stuff before. Is there a standout place for you, or a standout fight, or anything that's like, man, this is the one for me?
Deep Nest, man. Is...
Fuck, we have to talk about the Deep Nest. Okay.
There were like 1,000 words.
Yeah,
I remember
I know.
Meaning to write like 100 words. It was basically just going to say, fuck the Deep Nest. And then that, as often happens at Waypoint, that 100 words turn into 1,000 words about fuck the Deep Nest. Because the Deep Nest came to signify, like, more holistically what I found so deeply impressive about the game as a whole, as I talked to more people about the Deep Nest and realizing, specifically, you and I had this revelation where, you encountered the Deep Nest, I think, very early.
Very
and
early.
And I found the Deep Nest very late relative to a playthrough. And not only that, so you're supposed to, and I'll get into that because that's like a larger thing I find really interesting about this game. Like, if you're going on sort of like the targeted path,
yeah.
is that you encounter this really cool boss fight between three insects. I forget, like,
they're mantises.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
my like, one of my favorite areas in the game is the mantis yeah. village.
Yeah,
mantis village is great. There's that whole awesome bit where when you win the fight, then the mantis creatures, the soldiers, like the foot soldiers, like won't fight you in that area anymore, but you can still hit them by accident and fucking collect some shells or whatever the currency is in that game. But so you're supposed to kind of go down there. You have this encounter with the three mantises. Is that the
mantis
plural?
Lords? Mantis? I believe.
Yeah, they're the
mantis lords. The mantis lords.
You want to say like mantis or like mantis? It's not right.
No.
Mantisai.
Anyway, there are three mantis. Mantis. No, this is this is
mantises.
What's the plural?
Mantis lords. Just say lords.
The mantis
we know
lords.
How to
all right, we're gonna get off of this and just not have to. So you fight the mantis lords, and then they open a gate to the deep nest. But I like saw that fight coming up and was like, as I often do in games, to go. I don't want to go to that. I'm gonna make sure and like clear out the thing that's up to the left, and then I'll swoop back down. Well, if you do that, if you go up around there and do the exploratory thing, there's just a spot where like you fall through the floor and then you just get fucking dumped into the deep nest.
And you're
there's
in the
no way
of
to
it.
Get out.
Yep.
You can't just like crawl out of there. Like you have to just then escape the deep nest. And then I spent like 3-4 hours slowly going through this dark, dank, deeply creepy, like the most terrifying area in the game, like far and away. One that is trying to unsettle you in terms of its visual imagery, in terms of its sound design. It is meant to be unsettling and creepy. And outside of just like how well designed that specific area is, one of the other big draws for me in Hollow Knight was the responsibility and freedom it gives to the player, in which, yes, there are some signposts along the way that can kind of put you along a path. Although that ends right around the time of the Mantis Lords, like generally speaking.
Yeah.
But even before then, as I encountered, and as when I talked to other people who didn't even go to the deep nest until like 30 plus hours into the game, the game gives you so much freedom to explore in a way that it just respects your ability to be an explorer and rewards you for that in a way that I don't see many other games having the confidence and the trust that players are just going to figure it out. So many games are so afraid that you're going to go off the beaten path and then you're going to get scared off because you encounter something that you're not ready for and that's going to throw you off playing the game. And Hollow Knight says, actually, like, here it is. And, like, it's up to you, like, go figure it out. And just the amount of respect it has for the player to try and figure it out themselves takes a lot of faith on the developer's part. Mm-hmm. And as the player, as you figure that stuff out and put those pieces together, it's so deeply rewarding as you start to see how everything begins to slot together.
Totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. I think a lot about the, you know, there's some highlights for me in this game, and so many of them are, wait a second, where am I now? What is this place, right? Where you go from like, okay, this is like a cool rainy city and everything is just kind of chill and like, yeah, there's some enemies around, but whatever. And then like you explore just the right / wrong way and suddenly you're like facing weird magical enemies who are summoning things and like, wait a second, okay, wait, did I just stumble into a fucking real ass boss fight that has multiple stages and like... This game knows when to pull its punches and when to come out swinging, and what the right. It's really hard to do this in a game where you can just give the control to the player, because the player could walk up to the door where like the climax of an area is, and then turn around and go somewhere else entirely. But I found that in this game, whenever I was like just coming to a lull, or when I started to feel confident that I understood a place, there'd be the twist. And it's really hard to do that in via just a game's geography. And to see them do it like consistently again and again was so special. And like so many standout moments for me of just like, okay, I walk into a room and there's just like, God, what is the dung beetle fight? Where it's what is happening? Why am I fighting this dude?
Why is he chill
with me afterward? Like, it's no big deal. So many little surprises like that really helped every play session kind of stand out, barring a few for me where the platforming got too hard and it would feel like I didn't make any real progress. The Dung Defender. Thank you. Thank you for knowing the truth of the Dung Defender. I go to you, Natalie. Is there anything? What is your favorite spot in this map? I know Patrick said Deep Nest, your most standout, but for you, I know you've like done it all. You did the Coliseum of Fools.
I did.
You did the DLC with the circus guy. What's his name?
I did do the fuck. What's his name?
circus dude,
circus
guy.
Man. I'll find it. It's so hard to pick one place that
Grimm.
Yeah, I was. Yes. Yeah, the Grimkin was such a. It was really cool to play this game on Switch because it came out with the Grimm, because the Grimkins and like the Grimm Troop was like a additional content pack, mm-hmm. and so like there were three additional content packs that the Switch already came with, and those just felt so already integral to the story to me that I was like, you can engage with them at such an early point that it didn't feel like I was doing endgame stuff,
right?
Which was really cool because it really informed my way of understanding the world in like a larger sense rather than like, okay, here's the world at base and then here's the extension, right. Whereas having them all together, it just all kind of melded. I would say my favorite area, I'm like looking at the map on my screen and I'm just like so sad that I finished this game.
Have you gone back through to the whatever the newest thing is? The
I haven't done the Godmaster. Yeah, I haven't. I've gone into it and I've tried one and I died. But unfortunately, I'm just playing way too many games right now and just don't have the time. I would say, pretty.
Are you looking at a map right now?
I'm looking at a map right now, okay. And I'm like, fuck, the Queen's Gardens are like so cool. And
is it the
like,
bubble just, area?
The Queen's Garden, no, that's Fog Canyon. Okay. That's where the bubbles are. Queen's Gardens is like the last area you probably end up in.
Oh, okay. I definitely
Yeah, and it's full of like it's like very platform heavy. It's like full of vines and stuff like that, but it's just like I just love the way like the structures are built and like and done in this game, and I just I would say like the mines, Crystal Peak is also a highlight. Just,
which is when you get that super fast like fly charge power.
Yeah, you get really the fly. Yeah, it's really good. But again, I think just being able to get to know the map on my own terms was such an important part of playing this game. And the pin system of like buying pins and like being able to assign.
Talk about that.
Yeah, so
I was frustrated with that system a little bit.
Though. I wish you could label.
Yes. I would forget what my pins meant.
Oh, yeah. I see.
So sure. I'd be marking like 8 different things, and then I'd have to open my phone and be like, this equals that. And it's like, what the game should let me do is like, I have the stylus. Like, just let me, I'd rather just have marked the map with a stylus instead of pins.
Yeah.
Or let me like assign quantify a what label the, yeah, assign the to pins the... to like. This is a gateway that I had lightning or whatever and I can't get through or
yeah,
something
totally.
Like that.
I just ended up like kind of creating my like writing on a phone basically. I would have really I like labeling maps. I think it's like something that more especially like exploration games should do is like be able to have the players label and mark places that are, you know, of interest to them. So those like kind of became my signifiers of how I moved around because I just would remember where I had pins before and things like that. I really just in terms of the dialogue that you were speaking to before, the dialogue always felt in service, not in service of some like larger, like in the Dark Souls way where like the dialogue can be riddles or like in service of some like larger grandiose idea. It felt like super grounded in this world and like in these characters' like life experiences rather than trying to like play a part. It was more about
in Dark Souls it feels like, oh, someone wrote this. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's a part of a larger performance piece. Whereas in Hollow Knight, I feel like, nah, like they're just characters. And like, there's equal ways to do it. But I think part of it, because I played so many of the Souls games and games that try to imitate that style, it was kind of nice for someone to just be like, the characters are just being
this
characters.
This is just Quirrell or whoever who is like another wandering adventurer kind of, and you've run into him at some places and like, oh, hey, it's this guy. Cool. Hey, how you been? You know?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's like a familiarity there where you like feel like you're actually getting into the character. Like, you're not just, like, looking at it. Like, yeah. You're actually kind of getting a little bit deeper inside that's not as, like, performative. And there are, like, there are, like, goofy characters that are, like, super, like over the top. And I mean, look at what's his name? The, who's the little man?
Oh,
which little
man? That little that you have man?
To keep saving?
Zote?
Yes.
Zote the Zote, Mighty.
Yes. Yeah. Zote the Mighty.
He was so
exactly.
good.
He was so good. And like, asshole. That felt like, he like that felt so true to his sort of like even yeah. though he was like kind of over the top, it was like this is also a world where like people are fighting for glory, they're fighting for, you know, glory to survive. So it's like less sort of like a glory just for glory's sake, but it's like there's also such like a desperation to that and like a like we need this, like we need to get through this somehow in like this desecrated land, that I just found like super genuine and engaging.
Yeah,
yeah. There was a nice amount of like different people with different motivations that all felt like in service of like this broader mm-hmm. world. Like it all made sense that these people could be coming at this problem, whether for their own reasons or for trying to help people for mm-hmm. their own reasons.
And one of the best things about this game is there's a point at which you gain the ability to start to pick apart what those reasons
yeah,
are.
Yeah, 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 yes, yes.
Can we
yes,
talk
yes,
about
yes.
the dream nail? Is it called the dream nail? Is that what it was
yeah,
called?
Yeah, the dream
yeah.
nail.
Yeah.
I forget what fight that even is where you unlock. Oh, you go to the lake, right? You go to the, is that what it is? You go to the, or not, maybe it's not the lake. You go to like the weird dream zone. You go to like,
yeah.
You fight a boss who kicks your ass or something, and you go to the dream zone, and you come
and
back.
And then
with
a
the
whole
dream
button on your controller does something.
Oh, it's so good! Do you want to
I
set
mean,
up what
people,
that is?
I think it was you who said like, "Yo, wait till you get the X button," and I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about,
dude? It's so cool!
It's so,
so
like late into the game too.
It's so
like,
late.
It's not immediate by any means, and it's just wild that you to introduce like an entire new mechanic and yeah." Anyway,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the X button or whatever button it is, the dream nail button. All right.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back talking about the dream nail in Hollow Knight. So there is a moment when I should have spent that break looking this up, actually, and then chose not to. There is a moment when you go into this other like dream world and start to get a little bit of like, oh, this is what's really going on out here. This is what's like the truth about some of the big picture plot stuff. And you come back with the ability to, instead of just hitting people with your nail, you play as insects in this game is a thing I realized we have not said out loud.
Look, it's 2018. That's just not that weird, honestly.
It's just not that weird, is it? You know?
But it's funny because you feel so othered, like, in comparison to the other insects. Like, oh, my horns are kind of like that, but I don't fit
right.
into that. Like,
you're
you
not
don't,
a mantis. You're not a you're, beetle. You're not
yeah,
a...
Yeah, there are clear, like, types of bugs everywhere.
But you're just
and,
a
like,
bug in this one.
The closest one is Hornet, which is right. why she's like so interesting and like you get so curious about her.
Totally.
But
so,
anyway, the dream nail.
So you get this thing called the dream nail, which, you know, your regular weapon is just a nail that you swing around like a sword, and about halfway through the game, or maybe even later, I don't even know, you get this thing called the dream nail, which is a way for you to like get essence and like do some other important stuff, gaining soul and blah blah blah. But one of the things it does, you also need it to like challenge certain bosses or like refight bosses or whatever. But for me, the coolest thing it does is when you hit any character with it, whether that is like a named NPC or like a random enemy, you gain access to their thoughts, like whatever they're thinking mm-hmm. pops up on the screen, and so you can use mm-hmm. that in boss fights. You can do that with NPCs. and along you do that with regular enemies. And along the way, you end up getting some really heartbreaking stuff, either from enemies who are like, oh, they're clearly very far gone, you know, or like, or driven by like righteousness against me. They're right to want to kill me. Or people who you think are like totally chill and totally just like, oh, look at this cool lady. They go, no, she wants to eat me. She wants to kill me and eat my body. And that stuff is so funny and it's so cool. And it was so neat that far into the game to get a new verb to help explore the world. You know, like this game doesn't have a million items in the way that Dark Souls does, where it can tell its story through item descriptions. I mean, there are some things like that for sure. There's like the hunter's notes and stuff like that. Yeah. But like this specific, having this new angle to tell a story from was, or to help build, do the world building from, was really, really, really cool. And I was really happy to have that addition.
Yeah, and encourages you to like go back and like re-explore. Like anything that can actually convince someone to go back and re-explore everything they've already seen, especially in a game that's as can be as difficult to navigate when you're like first exploring and don't have, or if you like don't have the compass equipped and like you can't place yourself unless you like really know the area you're in. It's just, yeah, the dream nail was really crucial. And I wish I would have used that on the banker bug before gave her all of my money.
Did you not get that back at some point? Can you not chase her down?
You
and be like, yo,
you
give
chase
me my
her
money?
Down. That was such a wild moment for me when I like found there's like this banker bug that you can deposit your, what are they called? The coins in.
I keep wanting to say shells, but I don't.
It's
remember.
Not shells. It's similar to shells.
Geo.
Though.
It's geo.
Yeah, that you can give your geo to, and then like after you give her more than 2,000 geo. So when you give her the geo, when you die, you can still like go get it. So when I had like a ton of geo at one point, I gave her like 8,000 geo because I was walking around with just my pockets full, and I was like,
that's so
I
much
come
money.
Back through, and I was like, where's she at? Where'd she go? And I like randomly found her too. I like just like totally stumbled. I was like, oh, this great beacon of just genuine like niceness.
Camaraderie.
Just gonna
We're
hold
all out
my
here together.
Just hold my money for me for a little bit. And then I fucking find her taking a bath in the fucking city of lights, just chilling. And I was like, excuse me. And she was like, oh, well, I didn't think you'd find me. I can't give it back. I've already spent it. And I was like, I know you didn't spend it. And I gave her a whack. And then I got all my money back after like 15 more whacks. But
that's extremely
that
funny.
Was it pulls the rug from under you like in totally like funny, genuine moments that are just it's. Just a good game.
It is. It is. Game. It is. Before we wrap up, I'm curious from both of you what you want to see more from Team Cherry, this developer who was this their first full release as a commercial product? Because I know Hollow Knight had a history as like a flash game before. There are other projects they worked on.
You know, it was two people, right? Is that largely? I mean, I know things probably expanded a bit from their earliest contractors,
right?
But I think it was largely two people. Let's see, Hollow Knight.
Team Cherry. Yeah, I truly don't know.
Three people.
That's a small team. Presumably additional help with QA and stuff after.
Whatever.
But like, but yeah, no, that's
but still
that's
an exceptionally
remarkable.
Small team that pulled off for their first project. And they seem to have taken an approach similar to
Shovel Knight.
Shovel Knight, yeah. Where I like Shovel Knight a lot. But I will admit to being like kind of frustrated that I was like, yo, you guys are really talented. Like, go make another game. And instead they did the smart thing, which is like cultivate a community and just continue to support the thing that people fell in love with. And Team Cherry seems to be doing the same thing with Hollow Knight.
Which is like do a bunch of free DLC, right? Continue to support the game. They put out 3 free DLCs already or 4?
Something like that.
All which add new areas, new enemies, new story stuff. I think they're working on one of the ones that hasn't come out yet is one that's like a playable Hornet campaign.
Yeah.
I think that might be the final one.
Okay.
That they're doing.
Do we have any idea what they're doing next? Because that is like my biggest question right now is like, I think this team is incredibly talented. I think I'm going to continue to pick away at this game. I open it up once a month and play for like 90 minutes and I go like, oh yeah, this game's good. But I have a million other things I need to play. I think bit by bit, I'm going to keep trying to peck away at it until I get through it. But I'm really curious, like, where do you go from here? This game was super successful. You have a game that has probably brought in a decent chunk of cash and you can make something even whatever, even more ambitious if you want to, right? So I'm curious, what do you want to see this team do going forward? And also, what would you want from a Hornet campaign, a Hornet DLC?
Oh God! Just a whole new world with the Hornet.
Just a whole new world. He's like, throw out the old map. Just give me just a whole new game.
Throw out the whole thing. Give me a whole new game. I mean, I think what this team has done a really good job of is leaving spaces in like what they have so far that don't feel empty, but can be filled with like more story. Like it doesn't feel like there are gaps. It like feels like there's like things that are unknown. Not like gaps in the knowledge or in the story. So I would like to see them. I don't want to see everything filled out because I think there is something there about sort of that loss of information and just like trying to pick up the pieces and kind of moving on to this like new world.
Right. Because we didn't really get into spoiler territory in terms of what the main thrust of the story is, who the Hollow Knight is, what the Radiance is. There's all sorts of like capital, like there are all sorts of proper ass nouns that make me excited when you start digging into
and
the
like,
history.
And like ending, good ending, best ending sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Going on here as well.
Or even just like debatable what is the best ending by the end, right? Sure. Because like, what do you think of the Radiance? Totally. What do you think of this or that? And I think there is some value in like, hey, let's not give the final answer to that stuff.
Yeah. I would like something that proposes more questions, but maybe towards a different thing. Or maybe like it's like the prequel where that is not like necessarily meant to explain, but create a context.
Right.
That would be super interesting.
I want to see this world filled with bugs having a good time or having a bad time.
Yeah,
but like, let me see the city.
Just bugs hanging out.
Totally.
And then maybe they stop hanging out.
Patrick, how about you?
So I haven't seen, I did sort of like the regular ending and then haven't gone and done like the last, like, you know, 5 to 10 hours of extra stuff to see the last bits of it. I've wanted to go back, but that unfortunately, like a lot of games, once you fall off, it's like super hard to, especially now that like I'm at like end game stuff. So it's like the game's pretty difficult. I could probably get back into the swing of it, but I have a fear that I never will. I mean, I don't feel like I cheated out of anything. I Hollow Knight, I think I've expressed in the past, was one of those rare games that as I'm playing it, I very quickly realized how good it was and how much I appreciated it. And that I sometimes you play a game and go, oh shit, like this is one of my favorite games ever made. And like, you just have that realization up front as opposed to something that happens in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
I've grown to appreciate it even more over time, but it is a game that it was cool in the moment to be like, oh my God, like this is going to be a top 10 game for me and I'm only halfway done with it. Like that's like a really neat sort of thing to feel. By the end of it, at least, without having seen how the story wraps, like maybe this is sort of a cop out answer, but like this team is so smart that I don't even know what I would want for them to do next. I sort of just trust them. Like I would have said with Dark Souls, I mean, this is not to take away from how much you like Dark Souls 2, but like I was much more interested in the leap from Dark Souls to Bloodborne,
sure,
to Sekiro than I am in an iterative sequel based on the thing they've already done. So like I would love I would love for them to take what clearly is something like pretty masterful. And then like, what do you do with that from there? Like a straightforward sequel, just like a big new map with different areas.
Right.
Like this continues to be my like sort of anxiety about a Spelunky 2.
Right.
Like, I don't know that I just need that with new items. I may still like that. It may still be good. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. And actually there's enough there that this was totally worth like somewhat of a retread. But like I'm more interested in the Dark Souls to Bloodborne jump, which is like, all right, so you liked this. Hold tight.
Okay, I'm listening.
We're going to kind of throw you for a loop,
but
we're going to go off in this direction a little bit, and it's going to pay off because what you know already is going to help you get there, but we're going to kind of, you know, kick your feet out from under you and go in something that's a little bit surprising. So, like, I guess that's what I would like to see from them is, like, it'd be strange for them to abandon right. so much of what resonated, but I would be, again, in the Spelunky 2 thing, like, not disappointed, but I'd love to see them go in something that surprised and made me feel uncomfortable. I want to be made felt uncomfortable, even as I'm going into something where I have some foundational text and institutional knowledge of how to jump into it. So I guess that's where I would would hope they go.
I can walk with you there because, like, you know, I know how I feel about Dark Souls 2, but part of the reason I do is because I already got over the, like, for me it was like Demon Souls to Dark Souls was that sequel, and series.
I played Demons later, right, exactly. So, like, that was my jump from
here's
there.
Here's my pitch, which is a similar thing. Is okay, you know, I already things I love that this game does great. Exploration is kind of like player led exploration. You see the world, you just go out there, find some stuff to do. The kind of sense of melancholy, like this deep sense of like, there's something off about this world. Like, I'm so small in the face of this grand thing that is at once beautiful and also terrifying. The relationships, the kind of characters and the kind of warmth that grows between you and them, the big boss fights, the bosses that can be just like, oh, wow, look at this giant thing. Like, I don't know how I'm supposed to fight this thing. But also it does the other thing where it's like, oh, man, I'm 1-on-1 against like a Mantis Lord. I guess it was 3-on-1, but you know. I want Team Cherry to do to get the Dragon's Dogma license from Capcom. And do the Dragon's Dogma. Do Dragon's Dogma 2. It could be 2D, it could be 3D. I'm happy with either. But I want to see them actually do... What I would love for them to do is actually make an action RPG that goes even further. Because one of the things we didn't talk about at all was the charm system, which is like how you put together your build of what, like... You know, okay, do I do the gathering swarm that gives me little bugs that, like, crawl around? Or, no, that's the one that's, like, that's the one that gives you the geo, that like, the loose geo that's followed. But there is one that's, like, I have a little bug following me around. I have one that hits spores. And there are so many cool combat and exploration abilities tied to that stuff that I want to see them lean into that even further. Like, I remember playing Dragon's Dogma for the first time. Actually, no, I didn't even play it. I was watching Patrick, your quick look of the game when you were a giant bomb. And you were like, I'm a magic archer. Look at this cool shit I can do. This is wild. And, you know, locking onto stuff and firing magical arrow bolts that, like, do all sorts of weird flips in the air as they go in to hit the enemy. And there was something about that seemed so creative. And I can't even imagine what a team with the creativity and ability to execute that Team Cherry has would do with something like, no, we're going to actually make like a class system. We're actually going to make like all sorts of core differences between the way you and I might play the game. Like maybe you go down a magic path and I go down a warrior path and Natalie goes down a rogue path or whatever those different classes are. Like build that system side stuff out because they're very good at it. And then second would be like also just a completely new world. Like I just want to keep hearing about different like histories and different, you know, I want to continue to be as have my breath taken as many times as possible in ways like when I wandered into Queen Station for the first time, I was like, am I in a subway station? What the fuck is this game? And that feeling is something that I think that I'm confident they can continue to do. And I hope
I can see them flipping the color scheme, like going from a dark game to something like far more vibrant and full of life that also has some sort of darkness, blah blah blah, within it.
Exactly, totally.
I hope it stays 2D. Like
they do such a good job with
the
it.
Art
yeah.
in this so much. Sometimes you see, you know, games that are having rooted in sort of old school game designs that the reason that they're 2D or pixel based is not as much of a creative choice as much as like a limitation of resources and what they can accomplish. Mm-hmm. This is one of those games where like I just adored the art so much. I would just love to see them continue down that path. And they made such a sharp 2D combat game, which is so much harder. Like even though we've had so many 2D games to get something, usually like 2D combat games like that involve a lot of shooting. This involves a lot of like really intense melee combat that felt so good. There's probably more that they can build on that. It's probably in a customization path that, like you suggested, Austin.
Yeah. The fact that they were able to convey or to like convey such an expressivity through just the nail doesn't change. Mm-hmm. It is the same, like it makes the same movements, but the the expressivity is like transferred onto the player to change their movements instead. And the constant is the nail, but instead you are kind of changing the way that you move around based on like the badges that you have on. If you have like something that is like an aura sort of thing, you want to like get really close, right, or if you want to like extend your strike or whatever. So that was like,
yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah. God, also remember finding the first of the nail masters and be like, yo, I just met a guy who paints or whatever, whichever one you found first. And then he taught me how to do a new cool attack type. Like, what is this game? Feeling.
And then you find out one of them are their brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all brothers.
They're all brothers.
Yeah. And then there's a dad.
Oh, is there a dad? I haven't met the dad. That's sick. Hashtag, there's a dad.
Huge spoiler.
Big spoilers.
Spoilers.
There's dads in this game. Mirror, there's dads in this game.
Also, just the sound.
Yeah.
We did not say, but the sound design in this game is so, like, overwhelming and good in, like, the best way. Like, being in deepness, having, like, surround sound. Headphones on, or just like listening for the map guy, Conifer.
Oh, that stuff is so good. When he's like humming to himself as you step into the rooms. Like,
singing, and you're like trying to like follow the voice through, and you're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm about to come up on, but I need a map. So I'm just gonna go as far as I can and find this guy.
The voices in general, the bugs in this, all the characters have great mumbly, like, cartoon insect voices that are so memorable and so like distinct. There's such a character to them all. Just
Banjo-Kazooie, eat your heart out.
For real. Man, I'm talking myself to put this game on my list. Fuck. God damn it. Top 15 right now. Gotta cut some stuff. All right, that is gonna do it from us. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Natalie?
At Natalie Watson.
How about you, Patrick?
At Patrick Klubik.
Find the producer, Ricardo, over at @A_Cotto_appears on Twitter. As always, you can find us, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. We will be back with some more podcasts, probably, or this could be the last. I don't think this is the last one. I think I know what the last one is. I think there's one thing that makes sense to be the last one, and that'll be the last one. It won't be this. So look forward to that stuff in your feed for the remainder of the holidays. I hope everybody at home is having a great holiday. And as always, shout outs to Mello for letting us use a track for all of our Game of the Year, End of Year Celebration podcast. You can find out more about Mello at Mello Makes on Twitter or at 2mellomakes.bandcamp.com. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back with some more End of Year Celebrations in a day or two. Until then, peace.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.